Many sensible contemporary people have noticed that as a rule, these beings of different sex, victims of the same disease, consciously or instinctively seek and find each other, justifying the saying that has existed from olden times, one fisherman recognizes another from afar. And so, respected doctor, thanks to the causes so well understood by my wise uncle, in the following years, many women prostitutes from various other countries appeared among us in Persia. But owing to the instinctive attitude toward morality and patriarchality in family traditions acquired during centuries by the native women of Persia, regardless of their religion, these foreign women were unable to mix with the general mass of Persian women, with the consequence that from then on there began to exist among us the two categories of women I have mentioned. Well then, owing to the fact that the majority of these foreign women lived freely among us in Persia and went about everywhere in the markets and other public places, they often attracted the attention of our Persian men during what is called the functioning of the sex center of gravity, so that there was gradually formed in them, of course unconsciously, along with the already existing attitude toward women as mothers, a quite different attitude towards women simply as females. The property of having this distinctly double attitude toward women, passing by inheritance from generation to generation, has finally become so rooted in us that at the present time, our men not only distinguish these two categories of women by their appearance as easily as one distinguishes a man from a sheep, a dog, an ass, or whatever, but they have even acquired something which instinctively prevents them from mistaking a woman of one category for a woman of the other. I myself could always tell, even from a distance, what sort of woman was passing by. How I knew, whether by their walk or by some other sign, with the best will in the world, I cannot explain. But the fact remains that I could always distinguish them and was never mistaken, although the women of both categories wore similar veils. And every normal Persian, that is, someone not under the influence of tambak, alcohol, or opium, the consumption of which has unfortunately been spreading among us more and more in recent times, can always tell without fail which woman is a woman mother and which a woman female, that is, a prostitute. Every normal Persian considers a woman mother to whatever religion she may belong, and regardless of family and personal relationships, as his own sister, while women of the second category are simply like animals, infallibly evoking in him a feeling of aversion. This capacity for instinctive behavior toward women is very strong in our men and entirely independent of our consciousness. For example, suppose it should happen somehow or other that the youngest and most beautiful woman of Persia found herself in bed with a man of her locality. This man, provided I repeat that he is not under the influence of opium or alcohol, would be organically unable, no matter how strong his desire, to treat her as a female. He would regard her as his own sister, and even if she were to manifest organic impulses toward him, he would only pity her the more, considering her as possessed by an unclean power, and would try his best to help her ward off this danger. And the same Persian, in a normal condition, will also be unable to treat a woman of the second category, that is, a prostitute, as a woman mother, for however young and beautiful she may be, he will inevitably experience an organic aversion to her, and he could not treat her as a woman unless there had been introduced into his organism the toxic products I have named, so maleficent for people. Well, my dear doctor, I lived until my 20th year in Persia, respecting these morals and traditions like every ordinary, normal Persian. At 20, I happened to inherit some shares, which made me a partner in a certain large firm which exported Persian dried fruit to various European communities. Thanks to my position in this firm and various circumstances not dependent on me, I became its chief representative in the countries of the continent of Europe to which this fruit was exported. First, I went to Russia, then to Germany, Italy, and other European countries, ending up here in France, where I have already spent 7 years. In the life of none of these foreign countries is there such a sharp distinction between these two types of women, the woman mother and the woman prostitute, as I saw and felt during my entire youth in my native country. Everywhere in these countries, the attitude towards women is purely mental, that is, only imaginary, not organic. Here, for instance, however unfaithful his wife may be, a husband will never know it unless he sees it or hears of it. But among us in Persia, without having seen anything or heard any gossip, a husband can tell instinctively whether his wife is unfaithful. And the same thing applies to the woman. She can always sense the slightest infidelity on the part of her husband. Several scientists from the continent of Europe have recently made some very serious investigations in our country about this particular instinctive sensation. As I happened to learn, they came to the conclusion that generally, where the customs of polyandry or polygamy prevail, that is to say, where several wives or several husbands are permitted by the established moral code, a certain psycho-organic particularity is acquired in people in their relations as husbands and wives. This psycho-organic particularity also exists in the people of our Persia, because, as you know, as followers of Islam, we have the custom of polygamy. That is to say, each man is permitted by law to have as many as 7 wives. And this psycho-organic particularity in our Persian people, by the way, is that in none of the lawful wives is there any feeling of the husband's infidelity in regard to his other lawful wives. This feeling never appears in any of the wives except when the husband is unfaithful with a strange woman. And it is only now, respected doctor, living here in Europe and seeing all that goes on between husbands and wives, that I fully appreciate our custom of polygamy, so wisely established and so beneficial for both men and women. Although every man among us is permitted several wives and not just one, as is the case here in Europe, where the Christian religion predominates, yet the honesty and conscientiousness of our men towards their wives are beyond all comparison with those of men here toward their single wife and their family in general. Just look around you and see what is going on here. If you glance around the rooms of this Grand Café, besides the ordinary professional prostitutes and gigolos who are constant fixtures, you will always see hundreds of men and women sitting at the little tables, chatting gaily. At first sight, you would say that these men and women are married couples who are visiting Paris or attending to some family business. But as a matter of fact, it is practically certain that in the whole of this Grand Café, not one of these couples chatting so gaily and about to go to some hotel together are legally man and wife, even though each one of them may be the legal husband or wife of someone else. While these men and women are sitting here, their legal halves, who have remained at home in the provinces, are probably imagining and telling all their acquaintances very positively that their legal wife or legal husband has gone to the world capital of Paris to make some important purchases for the family or to see somebody there, also very important for the family, or something else of the same sort. But in reality, in order to get here, these birds of passage have had to scheme for a whole year and cook up every kind of story to convince their legal halves of the need for their trip. And now that they are here, in the company of deceivers and intriguers like themselves, they do their utmost to the greater glory of the nuptial hymn, Isaiah Rejoice, aided by the fine art attained by contemporary civilization in this respect, to decorate the foreheads of their stay-at-home legal halves with the largest possible artistic horns. In the European conditions of family life, if you see a man and a woman together, and during their conversation, notice certain lively tones in their voices and smiles appearing on their faces, you can be quite sure that very soon, if they have not already done so, they will most effectively present their legal half with a pair of the most magnificent horns. Hence, any somewhat cunning man here can pass for a very honorable man and the patriarchal father of a family. It is of no concern to those around him that this honorable man and patriarchal father of a family has at the same time, if of course his means permit, as many mistresses as he pleases on the side. On the contrary, people usually show even more respect for such a man than for one who is unable to have any mistresses at all. Here, these honorable husbands who can afford it have, in addition to their one legal wife, not seven, but sometimes even seven times seven illegal wives. And those European husbands who are unable to support several illegal wives in addition to their one legal wife spend almost the whole of their time drooling. That is, they do nothing all day long but ogle and, as it were, devour with their eyes every woman they meet. In other words, in their thoughts and their feelings, they betray their one legal wife innumerable times. Although among us in Persia, a man can have as many as seven legal wives, all his thoughts and feelings are occupied day and night in planning as best he can both the inner and outer life of these wives of his. And the latter, in their turn, are absorbed in him and try their utmost, also day and night, to help him in his life duties. Here, the inner relationship between husband and wife is the same on both sides, just as the inner life of the husband is almost entirely taken up with being unfaithful to his one legal wife. So in her inner life, from the first day of their union, she is always straying outside the family. As a rule, a European wife, as soon as she is married, considers her husband in her heart of hearts as her own property. After the first night, believing herself thenceforth secure in her ownership, she begins to devote the whole of her inner life to the pursuit of a certain something, that is, to the pursuit of an indefinable ideal, which, thanks to their famous education, is gradually formed in every European girl from early childhood and is constantly being embellished with more and more subtlety by various contemporary conscienceless writers. During my stay in these European countries, I have observed that there is no longer formed in the being of women here that something which should constantly maintain in her, as in our women, what is called organic shame, or at least the disposition to it, a feeling that, in my opinion, is the basis of what is called wifely duty, and that helps her to refrain instinctively from those actions which make a woman immoral. That is why, at any favorable opportunity, any woman here can very easily, without suffering and without any remorse of conscience, betray her legal husband. In my opinion, it is the absence of this shame in European women that has gradually effaced the line dividing the woman mother from the woman prostitute. And now these two categories of women have long since merged into one, And neither in their minds nor in their feelings do men make that distinction between women which almost every Persian man makes. Here one can distinguish the woman mother from the woman female only if one sees all her manifestations with one's own eyes. In the European conditions of family life, owing to the absence of the beneficent institution of polygamy, an institution which in my opinion should long ago have been introduced here, if only for the simple reason that, as statistics show, women here far outnumber men, there are thousands of other inconveniences and controversies that need not exist at all. And so, respected doctor, the fundamental cause of my second vice was that, having been born and brought up in traditions of morality diametrically opposed to those prevailing here, I came here at an age when the animal passions in a man are especially strong. To my misfortune, I came to Europe while still very young and was considered, according to the notions here, very handsome. My Persian type attracted a great many young women who saw in me a new and original variety of male and started up a regular hunt after me. They hunted me like big game. And I was big game for them, not only on account of my specific type, but also on account of the gentleness and courtesy toward women which had been instilled in me from earliest childhood in my relationships with our Persian women mothers. When I came here, I continued, though of course without realizing it, to be gentle and courteous toward the women I met. And when I met with women here, at first we only talked, mostly on the subject of contemporary civilization and of the so-called backwardness of our Persia in comparison. But one day, of course, under the influence of alcohol, which I was already consuming in rather large quantities, I fell for the first time. That is to say, as a future father of a family, I behaved abominably. Although at the time this cost me much suffering and remorse of conscience, the influence of the environment, combined with the action of alcohol, caused me to fall a second time. And thereafter, everything kept on going downhill, until in this respect, I am now a most filthy animal. At times now, whenever I happen to be completely free from the influence of alcohol, I suffer moral anguish and loathe myself with the whole of my being. And at such moments, I quickly turn again to alcohol to forget myself and thus drown my sufferings. Having lived this ugly life in various European countries, I finally settled down here in Paris, in just that European city to which women come from all parts of Europe and other continents with the obvious intention of putting horns on their legal halves. And here in Paris, I have become completely addicted to both these human vices, alcohol and skirt chasing, as you call it. And I run here, there, and everywhere without any discrimination. And now the satisfaction of these two vices has become more necessary to me than the satisfaction of my hunger. That is how it has gone with me up to the present, and what will come next I do not know or care to know. Moreover, I always try to struggle with myself not to think about it. With these last words, he sighed deeply and hung his head in dejection. I then asked him, "But tell me, please, are you really not afraid of becoming infected by those terrible diseases carried by most of the women that skirt chasers like you run after?" At this question, he again sighed deeply, and after a short pause, he said, "Eh, my dear and esteemed doctor, in recent years, I have thought about this question a great deal. It has even become a subject of such interest to me that in spite of everything, it has been, in a certain sense, the means whereby my miserable inner life has flowed more or less endurably. As a physician, You will, I think, be greatly interested to know how and why this question interested me so much a few years ago, and what conclusions I came to after seriously observing and studying it whenever I was in a relatively normal state. About 5 years ago, I had such a spell of depression that even alcohol had scarcely any effect on me and no longer relieved my psychic state. During this period, I often happened to meet certain friends and acquaintances who talked a great deal about these shameful diseases and how easily one could be infected by them. These conversations started me thinking about myself, and little by little I began fretting about my health, almost like a hysterical woman.